This is an ABC podcast. This is the Victorian Country Hour with Warwick Long on ABC Radio Victoria.
The new music will take some getting used to. Good afternoon. Yes, Warwick Long filling in just for today here on the Country Hour while Nikolai is away and doing some training. We're going to talk water today, which I'm sure won't be a surprise to many of you. Both major parties have said they're going to do something to find out if there's been any wrongdoing in the water buyback in Queensland from Eastern Australia Irrigation. This has been in the headlines for a week now, and the Basin Plan is squarely front and centre during the election. Will it change your vote? Are we talking about the right issues? I'd love to hear from you on the Country Hour today. 1300 977 222 is the number to call. 1300 977 222. Or you can text your thoughts to 0467 842 722. So yes, there will be water politics on today's show, but that's not all. We'll also talk about this.
Cattle aren't the only animals here.
You couldn't go and mow the lawn without the dogs coming to have a look, see what you're doing. And a friend suggested they'd had success out there at Muttaburra and Longreach with running donkeys. So we thought we'd try it.
Guardian donkeys on the Country Hour today. So if all the water politics gets too much for you, hang around for the Guardian donkeys. That'll be worth your while. Thanks for joining us today.
On ABC Radio Victoria, you're with Warwick Long for the Victorian Country Hour.
Yeah, the questions surrounding federal government buybacks of water from Queensland properties continue. Pressure's been building on the government, its former Water Minister Barnaby Joyce, Liberal MP Angus Taylor, to explain the purchase of water from a company co-founded by Mr Taylor before he entered politics, which is linked to the Cayman Islands. As you've heard on the Country Hour this week, the Coalition have referred the issue to the Auditor-General, asking for every water purchase since 2008 to be examined. Today, Labor have given their plan. To take us through what is being said, Kath Sullivan, the Parliament reporter with the National Reporting Team, can join us. Welcome to the Country Hour, Kath.
G'day, Woz.
Where do we stand right now? What's being promised?
Well, I'm standing in Parliament House. Not sure about you. Boom, Tish. Did you like that? Sorry, that's a bad start. Look, Warwick, in the last half hour, Tony Burke, who is the opposition's water spokesman, has come out and announced that if Labor is to form government next month, it will call a commission of inquiry to investigate the circumstances relating to those water deals that we've heard so much about over the last week or so that came out of Queensland in 2017 at a time when Barnaby Joyce was the Coalition Water Minister.
So what is the detail of what's being promised by Labor?
Good question. At this stage, it's a commission of inquiry, which would essentially have the same powers as a royal commission and could compel witnesses in the same way that a royal commission might take place, would be used to examine just these two water deals that took place, Kia Ora and Clyde Properties, which I mentioned took place in 2017. Now, Tony Burke did address the media a short time ago, and he was asked why these deals in particular stick out and why Labor wouldn't be exposed to the same scrutiny or other water ministers that we've had since the Murray-Darling Basin Plan came into effect, and we have seen the government buy water back from irrigation. He was asked why these two deals in particular, 28 gigalitres, almost $80 million worth of taxpayer funds, were different, and here's what Tony Burke had to say.
Oh, can I explain here that this is different to any other water purchase, and that's why we're not wanting to investigate into any other purchases that Barnaby Joyce made. We're not wanting to investigate into purchases that were made under David Littleproud, under Simon Birmingham, under Bob Baldwin. This is different to any other purchase. Because there are questions here about value for money and why the property was chosen that the government has been unable to answer. Now, the government says the appropriate process is the Australian National Audit Office. We've already had a 2011 report from the ANAO that looked at all the Labor purchases to date at that point in time and gave them all a clean bill of health. That's already happened. They've decided they want to do it again. Fine. What's happened here, let me go both to the value for money and the issue of conflict of interest. The value for money question is real. It was revealed yesterday by the Queensland Water Minister that Queensland had got, in 2015, when the government said they weren't going to run general tender rounds, and said, well, if you need to find it from a property, this property, and they pointed to the property and said, has, they're willing to sell the land, the unreliable water entitlements, and the river water entitlements. Half of it was unreliable flood water, half of it was river water. And that had a desktop valuation of $123 million. What the government did was they said they'd only buy the unreliable part of the water entitlements and nothing else, and paid $80 million for it. Now, on the face of it, that doesn't add up. And that's why people have said, well, hang on, is there a conflict of interest here? And the questions about a conflict of interest and who's involved in the company are questions that the government has refused to answer. Barnaby Joyce says he knows. Angus Taylor will simply say that he set it up, but it's not him anymore. But no one will tell us who is involved. And when you have so many questions about value for money, it's quite reasonable to say, well, we want to know if there's another motive here. Because effectively what they did was they paid Versace prices for water from the reject shop.
Opposition water spokesman Tony Burke speaking in Sydney about Labor's election commitment to call a commission of inquiry into two water buyback deals carried out by the Australian Commonwealth Government in 2017.
We're speaking to Kath Sullivan, our Parliament House reporter here on the Country Hour, as we talk through what Labor is committing as part of the scandal surrounding water buybacks in the Murray-Darling as we go through another week of this election campaign. And Kath, is it a bit rich for Labor to be promising an inquiry into a specific water buyback from their political enemies when they've been accused of doing similar things by their opponents?
There's no doubt that the opposition is trying to really ram home Barnaby Joyce's role in this. I think it interprets Barnaby Joyce as having somewhat of a toxic effect for the coalition. We know that he's been outspoken in the past and has been at odds with those within the LNP himself. So he certainly has been highlighted for special treatment in this instance. Those critics of Labor and the opposition, I dare say, will be quick to point out that there have been questions raised over deals done when Labor was in government, water deals. And I think it's pretty easy for those critics to suggest that this is being a little bit hypocritical just by pinpointing two deals. But there you had it, Tony Burke certainly pointing out that he thinks these deals are different and do need special examination.
Yeah. Was he asked if this is about defeating his opponent or getting the system right? Because I suppose that's the questions that come out of this.
Yeah, well, the thing is that if we have a commission of inquiry, we've already had, I think, four reviews this year alone. I counted up something like 80 recommendations that have been made at various levels of government regarding the Murray-Darling Basin, really before any of them can be enacted upon. The same goes with David Littleproud yesterday calling on the Auditor General to review all of the water buyback purchases that have been made over the last more than a decade now. We won't know the results of that until after the election. So it is really interesting. Tony Burke was asked if he was politicising the issue. I will have to go back and listen to the way that he responded to that. I think he might have said something to the effect of, we're not politicising it. If we wanted to do that, we would have gone into a wider review of the entire basin, which is certainly something that crossbench MPs have been calling for. I think the Greens and Centre Alliance Senator Rex Patrick have been pretty vocal about calling for a royal commission into the management of the Murray-Darling Basin as a whole.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if we'd heard from many crossbenchers yet. Is that still the position of the bulk of those, to have a royal commission into the plan?
Certainly in terms of the Greens and the Centre Alliance. And yesterday there were 14 independent candidates for this next month's federal election who joined together saying that they wanted to have a an integrity commission look into these water deals. Now, of those 14, some have committed to a call for a royal commission into the Murray-Darling Basin plan, but the 14 yesterday were more about a national integrity commission, again, reviewing these specific deals carried out in 2017. But whether that is broadened as we make our way towards May 18 to include other deals done either under different coalition water ministers or Labor ministers, that might be potentially something else that we see.
We'll go to you some of your calls and texts soon. You can call 1300 977 222 if you'd like to have your say on where things stand with this issue. You can also text 0467 842 722. Are you happy with what you're hearing from major parties on this? Are these reviews enough, or should they go further? We'll also hear from the Victorian Farmers Federation and the Environmental Farmers Network as well shortly on the Country Hour. Just before we let you go, Kath Sullivan, I suppose in your view, in the middle of an election campaign, what happens from here? Where does this stand?
I just think there is absolutely no doubt now that this is a national political issue. I feel like it's something that regional communities, basin communities have been talking about, environmentalists have been talking about for some time, but the images of the dead fish so fresh on our conscience from the summer, and now the suggestion or this call for an inquiry into a deal, which at this stage it doesn't look like anybody is alleging that anything illegal went on. We certainly knew about the deals. They were made public. Our colleagues in Queensland reported on the deal when it first occurred in 2017. So it is a bit difficult to see what Labor is trying to pin or what specifically it is suggesting has gone wrong. You certainly heard Tony Burke talk about the value of the deal and calls for transparency around how that might have been set. But it is really interesting now that Labor is making a complete national political issue out of this, believing that there are potentially votes to be gained in metropolitan urban areas, as well as addressing those concerns in regional Australia. One other thing I'll just point out that Tony Burke was asked about today was whether or not he thought this would be such an issue had Australia not been in drought and the Murray-Darling Basin system experiencing such low inflows as we're seeing this year. And he dismissed that. He said that wasn't part of it at all, that he wanted to see a healthy river return. And so I just thought that was an interesting point to end on too, perhaps.
Kath Sullivan, thanks for joining us.
Good on you, Warwick.
Kath Sullivan, our Parliament House reporter, taking us through some of the issues surrounding water at the moment. At this election, with an announcement from Labor today, they will hold a judicial review into this specific water purchase undertaken by Barnaby Joyce. And you've heard from Tony Burke already. We will go to the Victorian Farmers Federation in a moment here on the Country Hour, where it's 18 past 12. But before that, some of your calls on 1300 222 774. Oh, no, that's the wrong number. I'm not in Melbourne anymore, am I? 1300 977 222 is the number that Ray has called. Ray, welcome to the Country Hour.
Hi, how are you going?
Your take on this issue, Ray, where do we sit?
Well, I think that we're looking about it the whole in a completely wrong way. I mean, certainly we know that the climate change is real and it's occurring. But one of the things we're overlooking is the fact that all our all the major cities in the country are not using recycled water. So if we start from a plan of recycling the water that we use in the city so that it's reused and reused again, then the water storages that we have might be able to be used for not only supplementing city water, but also used to pump back into the rivers in the inland.
Do you think anyone would be willing to do that in the middle of an election campaign, to put that on the agenda?
Every major city in the world, New York, London, Paris, all use recycled water and have been doing for years. I don't see them up in arms about it. I think that it's just a divide that we have to get over. But when you look at the capacity of the amount of water that it would save, those water storages like Thompson Dam and the reservoirs that feed into Sydney and Brisbane, some of that water then could be turned back, and not only to supplement the inland rivers, but also at the same time you could actually use it to create hydro electricity, so that as it's being pumped back into
I don't know if you're going to get that this election campaign, though, Ray, but I take your point. You'd like to see that put on the campaign list. Let's go to Arthur in Yakandanda. Arthur, welcome to the Country Hour.
Thank you. I think the issue of having a separate independent inquiry into this business of who sold water to who would be totally irrelevant if we had already had a federal ICAC, which is way, way, way overdue. They would have long since picked it up, got it under investigation, and it would have been off our airwaves and out of our hair, and we could get on with more important things.
That's an interesting point, Arthur, because you're right. There were a lot of questions raised in regional papers and regional press, the ABC Rural as well, at the time this purchase was made, and it hasn't come up again until now during the election campaign. So you thought, if there was a federal ICAC, it would have been sorted by now.
Yeah, this is a really old issue, and you can go back to our old reference, Yes Minister, where they had an episode about it. And basically, Sir Humphrey said to the minister, well, you can't hold an inquiry unless you know what the outcome is going to be.
True words, Arthur. Thank you very much for your call as well. I love how often satire shows about politics become, part of our reference point when it comes to these things, doesn't it? 21 past 12 here on the Country. And more of your calls, if you'd like, 1300 977 222. Let's go to the Victorian Farmers Federation Water Council Chair and Spokesman, Richard Anderson. Now, welcome to the Country Hour.
Thanks, Warwick.
As you've heard, Labor want an inquiry into this specific water deal. How does that sit with you?
Look, we don't mind an inquiry, obviously, as a VFF, but I think you need to put it in perspective. There is a process in making these purchases. Now, for whatever reason, they only want to look at these two, and I heard Kath's report from Canberra, maybe political, but there is a process to make these purchases, and that process is followed by the department. Now, I don't know what there is to hide here, and I don't want to guess what there might be to hide, but I can't see why you can't do it with all these large purchases. I mean, we've had the Torelli, we had Twynham purchase, Tandale, we've had the Nimmi Cairo, there was 20 gigs of supplementary water bought early in the piece. I don't know, for the sake of transparency, why we don't open it up to all of them.
So you just rattled off a number of buybacks of large amounts of water. We're talking hundreds of millions of dollars over those various different buybacks that you've suggested there. So you think if there's going to be an inquiry into how this deal was done, it should be wider, looking at some of these other deals?
It should be looking at some of these other deals. Tony Burke repeatedly talked about value for money. Well, from a transparency point of view, where all these others value for money, I think you need to have a look at all of them. I mean, there's probably only been half a dozen rather large ones, so why not expand it to all of them rather than just, you know, for political purposes or otherwise, you know, be concentrating on this one.
You've been involved in, well, the issues around the Murray-Darling for an extraordinarily long time. How do you feel about this issue being at the centre of the election campaign this week, and what outcomes do you think that could create?
Look, it might go on a witch hunt. At the end of the day, it might be above board, and I assume it is. So, as I said, there's a whole process through the department in Canberra when they make these purchases, and I'm sure there's some tricky negotiations take place at the same time. But just pointing it at this one, you'd have to say it's probably political for a reason, but I think you should open it up and have a look at all of these large ones. And as I said, there's only about half a dozen of them. I think Torelli may have been investigated at one stage by the Auditor General, and it was found they'd bought a lot of water and hadn't allowed for the losses or something. Well, if the process is wrong, then change the process, look at all of them and change the process.
Richard Anderson, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Warwick.
That's the head of the VFF Water Council, Richard Anderson, joining us here on the Country Hour. What does the environment make of it all, and what are they hearing this election campaign? John Pettigrew is a former orchardist and former board member of SPC, now the head of the the water spokesperson with the Environmental Farmers Network, and can join us in the studio. John Pettigrew, welcome to the Country Hour.
Good to be here, what?
It's great to have you in the studio. I suppose to start with, Labor have promised something around a judicial review. Coalition want an auditor general review of water buybacks. What do you make of this entire buyback scandal we're in at the moment?
Well, it's certainly come to a head over recent days, and it's something that a full judicial inquiry is something that we've been pushing for. Most environmental groups have been pushing for a long time. So we welcome the renewed interest in this, in the subject. However, I believe that neither of the two proposals from either side of politics at the moment really go far enough.
What would be far enough?
Well, a judicial inquiry covering the whole of the Basin Plan, similar to the South Australian Royal Commission.
So would you like a federal Royal Commission?
A federal royal commission would certainly be excellent, but as long as the body has the power to require witnesses to attend.
And you say neither proposal so far from either side of politics is enough. Why is that? Well, let's start with the Coalition's Auditor General review of all water buybacks. Why aren't you happy with that?
We think that the problems go further than just water buybacks. We're concerned with the SDL adjustment projects and many other aspects of the Basin Plan and its implementation. So we would certainly want the terms widened.
And Labor's look at the would be just specifically for this one, this water buyback. Is that not acceptable to you?
Oh, certainly not. No, this is not the only questionable water buyback in that northern basin. And no, it certainly needs to be broader.
This particular buyback to Eastern Irrigation Australia and the role of then Water Minister Barnaby Joyce has certainly put basin politics back in the spotlight in the middle of an election. Is the basin being in the spotlight during an election a good thing in your view?
Well, it depends on what you want to achieve. From an environmental point of view, we've had concerns with the implementation of the plan. We welcome the renewed interest. There's nothing like a drought and a federal election to pick up some of these topics, and I think we've been fortunate that the Basin Plan and water issues are one of the key issues in this election at the moment.
When we often talk about the basin being in the headlines, usually it's about the effect on the communities and the effect politically what these communities are going to do and changing their votes. You represent a different sort of side of that coin, don't you, being with the Environmental Farmers Network. Do you think what has been seen in the last 12 months in the basin will push people more to your side of fulfilling more of a basin plan and delivering more water back to the environment?
I think it depends on the areas you're in, and I think in your urban areas, certainly there's been renewed interest in the Basin Plan. We've had stark images of dead fish. We're drying up dead rivers. I think there's general concern right across the gambit of politics at the moment.
So what do you want to see from this election then? Is there a party or is there a proposal that you think should be supported more widely?
Look, I think we would certainly like to have the facility there to renew purchases directly off irrigators. I think that is a tool that you would love to have, not for the current position we're in, but down the track when the SDL adjustment projects come to fruition. We'll know whether they do produce the savings they're supposed to. You would love to have that facility available. So I would support that.
So you want to hear that? Labor's talking about removing that cap. That's something that you
That's
support?
Something that I think makes sense.
What about the plan in general? Is there any party telling you or promising you what you want to hear?
Not entirely. No, not entirely. At the moment, certainly the Labor Party is taking a more enlightened look at it, we would consider, but not purely to our requirements. No.
John Pettigrew, we thank you for coming into the studio and having a chat to us on the Country Hour today. That's John Pettigrew, who is the water spokesperson for the Environmental Farmers Network. You're listening to the Country Hour. News headlines is on the way, as is the full weather forecast. Been asking, well, how all of these promises from Labor, whether it be the judicial review into this specific water purchase or from the Coalition, an Auditor General look at all government water buybacks back to 2008, how you feel about those, or whether we're talking about the right things to do with the basin this election. 1300 977 222 is the number to call. If you've taken the time to write a text, thank you for doing that. But it appears our text message service is down right now. We're working on to fix that. So that's why I haven't been going to any of your texts so far. But Bill is from Wodonga and on the line. Bill, welcome to the Country Hour. What would you like to say? Oh, and we might have lost Bill. Let me try that again. Bill, are you with us?
Yes.
What would you like to say about this situation we find ourselves in the basin?
Well, the whole water issue is incompetent and inept because of stupidity from state governments and federal governments, including Labor and Liberal, particularly Labor, because they've got no idea of what they've done to the agricultural world.
How so, Bill? Like, in terms of when you're blaming governments, what did they do to the agricultural world that you're so angry about?
They should never have taken the water off the land, because now it's become a tradable commodity. So when they flood people's properties now, the government's liable.
Bill, thank you very much for your call. 1300 977 222. Certainly water prices, now they're not connected to land, are very high at the moment too. We've been talking about that with temporary water prices between $600 and $650 in the southern Murray-Darling as well. We might bring you a story on that. But before that, let's find out what's making news headlines at the moment. Sean Wales is in the newsroom for us today. Good afternoon, Sean.
Thanks, Warwick. A Ballarat police officer has described the 12th fatality on the region's roads this year as a tragic state of affairs. A Creswick man in his 40s died yesterday morning after his concrete truck slid 10 metres down an embankment at Navigators near Ballarat. Police are investigating if speed was a factor in the incident. Police are appealing for information over a sexual assault at the Bendigo Racecourse last month. It happened in a bathroom at the Golden Mile Race Day event on March the 30th. The offender, who is thought to be late 30s Caucasian with short dark hair and was wearing a blue checkered short-sleeved shirt, fled the scene on foot. Anyone who was in the area or saw this man is urged to contact Crime Stoppers. Former Senator Ricky Muir will contest next month's federal election for the Shooters, Fishers and Farmers Party. Mr. Muir will head the party's Senate ticket in a bid to return to Parliament after he was elected in 2013 for the Motoring Enthusiast Party. He lost his seat in the 2016 double dissolution election. The party has also announced two lower house seats in the traditionally safe Nationals electorates of Mallee and Gippsland. Food and Fibre Gippsland says it will target expansion into Asian markets as part of plans to grow the industry. The organisation has announced a growth target of 5% by 2025 after the National Farmers Federation announced plans to grow the industry by $100 billion by 2030. Food and Fibre Gippsland Co-Deputy Chairman Stuart Quigley says the organisation is looking at markets beyond China. And hundreds of people took part in vigils in Ballarat and Warrnambool last night to honour the victims of terror attacks in Sri Lanka. More than 300 people died in the Easter Sunday bomb blasts, including a Melbourne woman and her 10-year-old daughter. The vigils come as Sri Lanka observes a national day of mourning. And for all the latest news, you can visit our website abc.net.au/news.
Thanks, Sean. Sean Wales there with regional news headlines.
On ABC Radio Victoria, you're with Warwick Long for the Victorian Country Hour.
Says it all, really. Let's go to the Weather Bureau now, where Chris Godfred is standing by to take you through all of the weather for the next few days or so, well, next week or so, really. Chris, welcome to the Country Hour.
G'day, Warwick. How are you?
Yeah, good. Cloudy around my part of regional Victoria today. What's it like around the state?
Look, it's certainly true for central and eastern parts of Victoria. A bit more sunshine in inland parts of the west, though, where conditions have been a bit more stable. There's been a lot of middle-level cloud, as you said, and it has brought some limited falls of use to parts of central Victoria, extending down into South Gippsland during the morning as well. Just looking at some of the figures, at least up to 9 a.m. this morning, I saw Meredith had 5 millimetres, Ballarat 4, and that sort of extended down to South Gippsland, as I said. So Thorpedale got 4 millimetres as well, and there was 3 at Yarram. The highest recorded in the state was actually 8 millimetres at a gauge called Caligny North. So I guess you could call it patchy. But
Chris, you talk about rain in Gippsland. I got so excited then, and then you give me 3 and 4 mils. Oh, no.
Yes, although I think given the recent past, at least for this year, that's actually going pretty well. But certainly in the broad scheme of things, and it's not going to do more than keep the dust down for a day or two. But we do potentially have a little bit more follow-up rain to come on Friday with a decent cold front, although I'll talk a bit more about that in a second. But it's probably going to be one of those fronts which is more windy than wet, but it might just help keep a few more rain gauges ticking over. But at least for the rest of the day today, we still have that cloud across central and eastern Victoria, which will contract toward the east as we move towards the evening. So I think the potential for rain across most populated parts of the state is now largely gone. But if you are in the eastern ranges, there's even the possibility of a thunderstorm popping up about the ranges in the far northeast during the afternoon, and we may just see some further showers about that part of the world before it all dries up by a nightfall. And as for Western Victoria, that will basically continue to be dry and fairly cloudy down on the west coast where the winds are onshore. So as for the west coast, that's probably one part of the world where they might get a few showers to start the day tomorrow. So if you are heading out for dawn services, might be wise to take an umbrella if you're down on the west coast, where it may be just a little bit damp and showery to start the day, though it should clear during the morning. The same also goes for coastal South Gippsland, and also if you're in the far southeast of the state near the New South Wales border as well, where we will just have those sorts of western northwesterly winds which do tend to favour some light showers. But it will be dry further inland tomorrow morning, and maybe some fog patches around parts of western Gippsland and central Victoria. Not a huge amount of variation in temperatures tomorrow compared to today, so we should still be getting up to about 21 to 24 if you're in the north of the state. And down in southern Victoria, most areas should get pretty close to 20, and that includes if you're on the west coast as well. So tomorrow we'll also see the approach of a decent cold front. It won't really get to us until Friday morning, but we will start to see winds increase across Western Victoria later tomorrow, and we might just start to see showers increase across coastal Western Victoria as well. So that's ahead of the cold front, which is due to move through, basically to sweep across the state during Friday morning. It's a windy front, as I said, and it will also bring quite a rise in the seas across Bass Strait, which is worth mentioning mainly because it will be a long weekend for a lot of people who might be heading away from their normal places and out towards the coast. So we could actually be seeing significant waves getting up to 8 or 9 metres if you're out in open waters of Western Bass Strait on Friday. So certainly if you're near the coast, keep an eye out for the potential for dangerous surf in Western Victoria. And I think even as far east as Wilson's Prom could be a risk. As for weather for all us landlubbers, we are basically going to see scattered showers moving across southern and mountain Victoria during Friday, mainly during the morning. Then they'll start to clear eastward in the afternoon and contract to the coast. Only patchy falls for northern Victoria, though. We may just get some light showers getting up as far north as Swan Hill, but I think those northern plains in the north there shouldn't get more than about a millimetre during Friday. Whereas if you're in the south, you could get maybe up to 5 millimetres in most centres, and if you're more closer to the West Gippsland ranges or up in the upper Yarra catchment, you may get closer to 10 millimetres during Friday.
Nice.
It's unstable enough in the wake of the front to also maybe just give us a bit of small hail down in South Gippsland, and perhaps a flurry of snow about Mount Baw Baw and up as far north as Mount Buller. So
and
it's Sorry, Warwick.
Yeah. Oh, I was about to say, Chris, just quickly, with time against us into the weekend and early next week, what's on the forecast?
Sure. Yep, sure thing. So just to recap the weekend, we'll basically be in post-frontal flow, so just light showers on the coast and fairly cool conditions, but dry in the north. And then we have a high moving across Victoria during Monday and Tuesday. So we'll just see a slight warming for Monday and Tuesday, but largely dry. And then we have another cold front due next Wednesday.
So little bits of rain, most areas of the state, nothing hugely substantial, maybe even a bit of snow, and then clearing across the weekend and then into the early next week. Is that fair enough?
Yes, that's right. I think we're still waiting for that big season-breaking cold front, so we'll have to wait a little bit longer, I'm sorry to say.
Yeah, we're not calling anything a break yet. Chris Godfrey, thanks for joining us.
Cheers, Warwick. Thank you.
That's the Senior Forecaster at the Bureau of Meteorology, Chris Godfrey, taking you through the weather that you're expecting for the next 7 days or so. You're listening to The Country Hour. It is 22.1. Just briefly, before we move on from water issues, we're going to talk about multi-peril crop insurance and guardian donkeys in the next 20 minutes or so here on The Country Hour. But before that, two callers have been waiting patiently. Let's go to them before we leave our discussion on water. John is at Numurkah on 1300 977 222. John, welcome to The Country Hour.
Yes, g'day. I'd just like to talk about this water issue. I think a Royal Commission is required.
That's what you want? And you're not getting that yet from major parties, John.
No, that's right. It's no party knows what's going on with the water issue in northern Victoria, southern Riverina. If they take any more water, you might as well shut down the dairying industry, because that's on the brink of collapse. Now, if you shut down the dairying industry, how many labour units are in milk factories? You're going to have thousands of people out of a job. Now, there's that much environmental water being taken out now, it's not funny. It gets pumped through the Barmer choke. It can't get through the choke. It floods the bush. Before human intervention in the Murray River, the Barmer forest only flooded probably once every 5 to 10 years. Now it gets flushed 5 to 10 times a year. It's killing all the red gums. It's killing all the brumbies, so the brumbies are dying. Now,
and coming back to your original point, John, we're not hearing anything from, well, major parties yet as far as a policy that would give you what you want, a Royal Commission into the Murray-Darling Basin Plan. Steve's in Bendigo as well on the line. Steve, welcome to The Country Hour.
Good morning. Good afternoon, Nicola. See, I think there is a necessity for a Royal Commission or a jurisdiction review.
You support that too?
The commodity pricing that's been put in place for the trading scheme for water is accelerated, we know, in terms of the prices per megalitre. But someone needs to look into closely who is owning all of this water. And I think you'll find there's a lot of people, the elites in Melbourne, that own a lot of this water that's been traded. And so it's taken away from the farming community, and it's become a commodity pricing profiteering for a lot of the elites in the Melbourne marketplace.
And so that you're worried about who owns water and what they're doing with it, whether it's for profit or actually farming?
Yeah, it's for profit, and I think someone needs to look closely into this, because I think they'll be astounded when they find out who owns a lot of this water that's been bought in buybacks recently.
Steve, thanks very much for your call. We might leave the discussion on the basin there for a moment here on The Country Hour. It is 17-1. I know many of you, for water isn't the only issue that you'd like to talk about. So let's talk about grains now. One of the biggest issues facing that industry, it was once hailed as the silver bullet that would drought-proof Australian grain growers, but now the multi-perilled crop insurance market is in disarray. That's according to a report from grain growers, which says the multi-perilled providers have withdrawn their products en masse this season. Rural reporter Angus Verley spoke to the organisation's chief executive, David McKean, about what isn't working and what needs to change.
Yeah, there's been a number of changes with the multi-perilled crop insurance market over the last couple of years in Australia. And we've been monitoring and keeping an eye on what's been happening with that market. And, we were very hopeful with what we saw last year in 2018 was a really great product offering of a whole range of products and new products on the market in the multi-perilled crop insurance space. Unfortunately, in 2019, what we've seen is a number of these players actually, either reduce their offering in the market or exit from the offering in the market completely.
And why have those insurers withdrawn their products?
Yeah, there's a whole range of commercial challenges which make it difficult for a multi-peril crop insurance market to get established in Australia. You know, when we compare ourselves internationally, we do have a relatively small market. We also do have quite a variable operating environment and variable weather system. So what we did see was actually a really dry, you know, 2018 right across the East Coast. So that really took a lot of a hit on a couple of these new emerging players in the multi-peril crop insurance market.
Is this something of a chicken and egg type scenario where the insurers don't have that critical mass, which means that premiums are high and that's preventing uptake?
There's a whole range of those factors at play that are making it difficult. You know, when the new players are trying to get up and running in the market and build that critical mass, it's important farmers take them up. And on the flip side, until they have that critical mass, it's hard for them to maintain the confidence in the international reinsurance market as well. So they've got to maintain the confidence of their reinsurer at the back end, but they've also got to ensure that they're getting a good uptake from farmers across Australia.
Now, grain growers is seeking pre-election commitments from both major parties around multi-peril crop insurance?
Yeah, absolutely. As part of our election ask, what we're looking at is what are the right policy settings for increasing climate variability and to help the farmers manage that risk and build that sustainable product offering. So what we're asking for is a 150% tax incentive on the premiums of those products, to remove that barrier to entry for the Australian farmer and to help build that long-term sustainable product offering.
Now, this report from Grain Growers makes the point that multi-peril crop insurance is well established in places like Canada and the US and Europe. Is that because their climates are less variable or because they have governments propping up those programs?
There's a range of underpinning factors behind that. You know, yes, absolutely. Those countries do have a level of government support behind their multi-peril crop insurance programs. But what we're also starting to see is emerging commercial multi-peril crop insurance products in some of those markets like Canada that don't have government support, which show that once the market's stimulated and once it's built up, you know, these products can survive on their own two feet. And that's what we need to look forward to in Australia. It is a fact of what we have is the lowest level of government support in the OECD comes to Australian farmers. So we don't quite have that same level playing field. We also do have a much more variable climate, and that climate is increasing in its variability. So it's important that we look at the right policy settings that will help Australian farmers manage their businesses into the future and allow them to actually farm sensibly with confidence.
Even with some level of government support, do you think it's realistic for somewhere like Australia to have a multi-peril product when it does have such a variable climate, and you would imagine that insurance companies would regularly be facing big payout years?
That's why it's even more so important that the Australian government takes a very close look at the role that they can play in this market, is because particularly of that factor of our variable climates and you know, relatively thin market. It is one of those challenges for the long term, and on its own, 150% tax incentive will help stimulate the market.
Neither major party has an overarching sort of drought policy. Do you think this sort of support for multi-peril crop insurance could form a major part of that policy? And how likely do you think it is that you will get a commitment along those lines?
Look, we're hopeful that, you know, any incoming government is going to take seriously farm risk management as an important element of what they you know, do in their policy settings. So it's critical that multi-peril crop insurance plays a part of that.
That's David McEwen, Chief Executive of Grain Growers, speaking there to Angus Furley.
Celebrate Mother's Day with these great new DVDs Mum is sure to enjoy. DCI Vera Stanhope investigates the death of a fellow officer in Vera Series 8, available May 8. Essie Davis stars in the complete collection of Miss Fisher's murder mysteries. And The Midwives return with more joy in the 8th series of Call the Midwife. Available now from all DVD retailers and on digital download.
You're with Warwick Long for the Victorian Country Hour on ABC Radio Victoria.
Still getting used to the new music. Yes, this is the Country Hour. The text message is working, machine is working again, so I'll get to some of your messages and calls shortly on the Country Hour. But I did promise this as light relief from water politics, but it's also a serious issue that we should be talking about. A Queensland grazier has turned to donkeys to ward off wild dogs and says in the last year he hasn't lost a calf in any paddocks patrolled by the feisty guardian animals. Jennifer Nichols joined Ian Sylvester at his property, where he now has 17 donkeys running with his cattle.
Come on.
It's feeding time in the yards at Ian Sylvester's property at Coran in the Sunshine Coast hinterland. But cattle aren't the only animals here. Ian has been collecting and breeding donkeys.
When I came here in 13, we seemed to have a lot of dogs here. You couldn't go and mow the lawn without the dogs coming to have a look, see what you're doing. And a friend suggested they'd had success out there at Muddaburra and Longreach with running donkeys. So we thought we'd try it. They were off a property that used to run them with sheep and cattle. We started out with two and then found another two and put them with two different mobs of cattle on the place. Each group of donkeys run with a mob of cattle, and we've got about 17 here at the moment. They're their mates. They get on quite well. If there's too many donkeys, they seem to group up by themselves. Otherwise, they stick with the cattle. Two or three to the mob of cattle.
So what have you got in the way of cattle here?
About 120 breeders. Droughtmaster, Red Brangus, Santa, a bit of Red Brahmin.
And you've got calves there, and you haven't lost any calves to wild dogs?
I can't put a loss down in the last 12 months to a wild dog on this side of the farm. I can put one down on the other side, not on this farm. Ample donkeys running with the cows.
Were there donkeys in the paddock where the calf was lost?
No, there wasn't. There was donkeys in the paddock beside.
Anecdotally, talking to some of your neighbours, how many of them had lost calves to wild dogs?
Quite a few of the neighbours had lost from Traveston across to Kinkin. Plentiful dogs around here and lost calves and even up to yearlings.
You can tell just how much forest you've got around here, so there's some pretty good habitat for the wild dog.
10,000 acres of state forest just there, so, oh, national parks, they call it these days.
Have you ever seen donkeys interacting with the dogs? What do they do that scares them off?
Not sure whether it's the noise or just them chasing them. I don't bring my own working dogs into the yards, but do chase them if they're down the flat.
So they really defend their territory?
Yes, from what I can see, they do, yes. They travel the path with the cattle and they stick to them pretty quick, and they're very inquisitive, so they're not backward at going up and chasing something. They need a little bit of bite in them, so they go after the dogs. But they're only one part of all my management to control the dogs.
What else do you do?
I work with the Noosa Council, trapping and baiting.
So it's a multi-pronged attack, but pretty important when you consider that wild dogs have been responsible for so much damage in this sort of area.
If you're losing 15, 20, 30% of your income, you got to do something.
How much does a donkey cost?
Oh, around about $1,000, $900 to $1,000. One and a half weaners. That's how I work it out too.
So the return should be fairly quick if you're getting wild dog attacks.
Especially if you're losing five or six calves to dogs a year.
I asked Greg Mifsud, the National Wild Dog Coordinator for the Centre for Invasive Species Solutions, whether guardian donkeys are taken seriously as a means of wild dog control.
Oh, look, some people take them quite seriously. It often relates back to, I guess, the size of the property, the type of management that they intend on delivering, and also the extent of the wild dog problems. We have seen people use them really successfully in some places, but once again, it also depends on how serious the owner is in terms of managing the guardian animals. And they're only as good, a bit like anything, unfortunately, they're only as good as the amount of time and effort put into them. So provided there's a strong and well-run coordinated management program in the vicinity, we do see some people getting, you know, quite good results with them.
How often have you heard of donkeys being used?
Yeah, donkeys were used quite a bit, probably about 3 or 4 years ago. There's a couple of people around the Trap Rock area, southwest of Toowoomba, that have been using donkeys with reasonable success. Some are very good at protecting livestock. Others would sort of prefer to hang with themselves and do their own thing. So we have seen them used quite a lot. A lot of people tried them out around the Longreach, Winton, Barcaldine region there for a little while. But, yeah, it's a bit touch and go, and it depends a lot on the individual donkeys involved and how protective their instincts are.
National Wild Dog Coordinator Greg Mifsud. And for those considering buying a donkey, Ian Sylvester says remember to treat them well.
Yes, they are very sensitive. If you are cruel to them, don't be surprised, they will get you back.
So you've heard of this story from elsewhere?
From elsewhere, where a person hit a donkey with a jigger. The donkey put him in hospital. 6 months later, when he went back to work, he walked into the yards and said, "How are you now, donkey?" And he had to leave the yards very quickly.
Long memory.
A very long memory.
That's a very quick and swift lesson with no RSPCA involved.
No RSPCA, just a hospital.
Just a hospital. Cattle breeder Ian Sylvester speaking there to Jennifer Nichols. You're listening to The Country Hour. Plenty of your texts coming in on basin and water issues, what we've seen with this buyback now, with Labor promising they will have an inquiry, a judicial inquiry into this single purchase, and the Coalition saying that they will look at all water buybacks through the Auditor General's. Let the Auditor General look at all water buybacks back to 2008. Greg's on the line on 1300 977 222. Greg, welcome to The Country Hour.
Yeah, g'day, thanks. Just a quick one on that last caller you had about the investors owning the water. Two of the major owners of water, I'm told, as a former Prime Minister and a current Labor Senator.
You sure about that?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm told. I'm pretty certain about it, but anyway.
So you don't think they'd have much reason to change things if they're investing themselves?
Well, they've all got their snouts in the trough, haven't they?
Thanks very much for that, Greg. Greg on 1300 977 222. Quickly on the text line before we head to markets, plenty of you pointing out different buybacks which seemed either dodgy or have some questions about them at the time. Another one saying this is just slinging mud to try and stitch up Barnaby Joyce and the ABC's aiding and abetting it, says Bob. Mary says Victorian dairy farmers are closing daily and it's all because of water. Carryover is the problem and the Murray-Darling Basin plan. And before the Murray-Darling Basin plan, everyone was happy. Thanks for your text, Mary. And this one says, was the water firm water from one large seller is surely more valuable than lots of purchases from many small sellers. Also, the community financial impact would be less. So I don't think there is a big problem with the worth. A buyback of 28 gigalitres is a big deal and possibly not available through other methods. An amateur's observation, says Stuart at Ballarat. Thanks for your text as well. And so everyone's saying, would it be cynical if... Old Codger's saying, would it be cynical in thinking that this is just muddying the waters prior to the election instead of concentrating on other important issues? If we have some time, we'll get to more of your text. But before we do that, let's check in on markets now. First market for today, we'll begin in Warrnambool with the cattle market there. Eric Estrain's on hand. Hello, Eric.
It was the plainest quality offering of cattle seen at this selling centre in a long while. A small yard, it contained principally lean to poor condition dairy bred types. Only a few good beef cows were included in the reduced size yard in the 410 head. At least three regular exporters were missing from the buying rail, as there were no prime or better quality cattle for them to buy on the day. Cows generally sold 10 to 20 cents higher than at the last sale held 2 weeks ago. The odd few sea-muscled young cattle sold between 200 and 255 cents, with forehead pushed out to 288. The plain D-muscle grades were from 100 to 182 cents, with an odd sale topping at 235. D2 grown steers made 167 and 200 cents, while the bulk were D1s that sold between 155 and 196. Keen competition for the good cleaned-up heifery cows saw prices reach 232 cents, but most beef cows were from 210 to 225. The D2 grade sold between 190 and 210 cents, the D1 cows 170 to 190, and E1 cows mainly 140 to 165 cents. It's been Eric Australian reporting for MLA.
Thanks, Eric. Let's go to Horsham Sheep. Good afternoon, Graham Palmer.
Good afternoon, everyone. Lamb numbers declined this week at Horsham following the Easter break. 5,468 head yarded. Quality range from average to good, but most of the regular buying group in attendance, operating cleanly in a firm to dealer market. On the light and trade weight lambs, heavier next to heavyweight lambs, sold from around firm to $5 a head easier on the sale of 2 weeks ago, these heavy lambs made at $220. Stock was paid for $127 to $153.50, and they paid to $151 for first cross ewe lambs. Sheep numbers were also back at 2,119, covered all weights and grades. Sheep sold a steady competition, selling from around firm. Deer on the heavy merino ewes, slightly easier on the plain, the crossbred sheep. Heavy merino weather sold to $162. Light trade weight lambs, 18 to 22 kg, sold from $142 to $163. Average around 720 cents. Medium trade weight lambs, 22 to 24, sold from $164 to $180, to average around 710. Export 3 and 4 score lambs, 26 to 30 kg, sold from $189 to $201. Extra heavy export weight lambs, sold from $206 to $220. Medium weight sheep sold from $86 to $128. With a run of merino mutton, averaging around 520. And a bit of extra heavy hoggets made to 190, ram sold to 110, then Grant Pyman Horsham for NLA.
Thanks, Graham. That's it for the Country Hour. Nikolai will be back on your radio tomorrow with the Country Hour.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.